Laconia was only one of 1,300 and some new worlds. Her parents, like all the others in the first wave, had been intended as a survey force. Kara's mother had come as a materials engineer, her father as a geologist. She'd come as a baby. She'd seen pictures on her mother's handheld of herself in the tight-sealed diapers floating in the family cabin of the Sagan. The ship was still in orbit, a pale, fast-moving dot when it caught the sun just right, but she didn't remember it at all. Zan had been born a year after they'd all made landfall, and Kara didn't remember that either. Her earliest memory was of sitting in a chair at home, drawing in an art program on her handheld while her mother sang in the next room. Her second earliest memory was of the soldiers coming. Her parents didn't talk about that, so Kara had built the story from bits and pieces of overheard conversation. Something had happened on the other side of the gates. The Earth had blown up, maybe. Or Mars had. Maybe Venus, though she didn't think anyone lived there. Whatever happened meant that the scientific expedition that had only been intended to stay for 5 years was now permanent. The soldiers had come to be the government. They had ships in orbit, and the beginnings of cities already being constructed on the planet's surface. They'd made the town. They'd made the rules for how the town worked. They had a plan. "You've probably noticed," Instructor Hanu, her teacher, said, "that the orbital platforms have been activated." The schoolroom was the old cafeteria from the first landing, 10 meters by 8, with a vaulted ceiling and reinforcements that let it double as a storm shelter, or would have if there were ever any storms bad enough to shelter from. The inner layer of environmental sealant had started to whiten and flake with age, but the early fears about quarantining themselves from Laconia's ecosphere had gone by the wayside, so no one was in a hurry to repair it. There were no windows, the light entirely from ceramic fixtures set into the walls. "We've been asked to keep an eye out for anything that changes down here," he went on, "and report it back to the military." Which, Kara thought, was stupid. Everything changed on Laconia all the time. Telling the soldiers whenever a new plant showed up would be a full-time job. Was a full-time job. Was what all of their parents did. Or were supposed to do, anyway. She wondered if the windowless room was like being on a spaceship. Months or years without ever once going outside or hearing the rain tapping into puddles or being able to get away from Zan and her parents. Never being alone, never feeling the sunlight on her face, nothing changing, nothing new. It sounded awful. And then circle meeting was over, and the kids scattered around the room to find their tasks for the morning work period. Kara helped Jason Liu with his phonetic sounds lesson, because she was older and had already mastered it. Then she spent some time on complex multiplication. And then it was recess, and they all piled out to the meadow and the sunlight. Zan and two of the other younger boys ran across the road to skip rocks across the water treatment reservoir, even though they weren't supposed to. Since his best friend Santiago went to school in the military's program, Zan had to make do with first-wave children for playmates. So did Kara. But it wasn't as much of a burden for her. She didn't have any friends among the soldiers, anyway. That would change when they set up the lower university and everyone went to the same school, first wave and soldiers both. But that wouldn't be for another 2 years. There was plenty of time for things to happen between now and then. Mary Tenenbaum and Teresa Ekanjo came and sat with her, and before long, they'd arranged a zombie tag game with the other older children. The call for a second work period seemed to come too soon, but that was the way time worked. too fast when you weren't paying attention, and then slow as mud when you watched it. Zan wanted her to teach him phonetic sounds, more because she'd helped Jason with it than because he cared about the lesson, but she did it anyway. When she was done, she did some research of her own. The classroom had access to the observational data that the survey team had collected since they'd arrived on Laconia. Sunbirds were a common enough species that there might be something there, what they ate, how they matured, when they stopped needing to be cared for, that would help her. Because as soon as school was over, Zan headed out to play with Santiago in the town center. She was free to get her bicycle, the one her father had printed for her at the beginning of summer, and start back to the pond and the babies. The buildings in the town were of two different types. The old ones, the ones like her house, lumpy and round, built from the soil of Laconia and constrained by printed polymer sheaths, marked the original township. The other kind, solidly efficient metal and formed concrete, came later with the soldiers. The roads were new, too, and still being built. She and all the other kids loved riding on the smooth, hard surface, feeling the bumps and uncertainty of the land vanish into a steady, low hum that traveled up from the wheels through the handlebars and into her bones. They weren't supposed to ride on the roads because the soldiers sometimes had transports and cars come through, but everyone did it anyway. The sunlight pressed down, warm against her skin. The air had the soft, musty smell it got when rain was coming, the smell her mother called moldy coffee grounds. A swarm of smoke gnats rose up, swirling into the sky above her in their weird, angular patterns, like writing in an alphabet that no one knew. She almost stopped to watch. The road ended at a barracks and construction yard. Soldiers in their crisp blue uniforms watching her as she passed. When she waved, one of them waved back. And then she was on the rough trail again, and had to keep both hands on the bars. The effort of riding and the warmth of the afternoon brought her to a kind of trance, comfortable and mindless. In the moment, her body and the world felt like they were all the same thing. As she got near home, she tried to bring her focus back. There hadn't been a lot of study done on sunbird life cycles in particular, but she'd found some notes from one of the early surveys. They said sunbirds ate a lot of things, but they seemed to like the little gray encrustations on water roots the best. She thought that meant Mama Bird would have been diving deep into the pond to crack the little gray things free, and then the babies would gobble them as they came up. So she had to find a way to do the same thing, for a few more weeks at least, until the babies were old enough to leave and make their own nests. At home, the doors were open, letting the cool air into the house. She pulled the bicycle up beside the door. Her parents' voices came from inside, raised the way they did when they were having a conversation from different rooms. Her mother's words sounded jagged and stretched, like a wire on the edge of breaking. Kara paused to eavesdrop. "We're bearing the risks. As long as we're here, anything they do can affect us. They don't know what they could wake up." "I know," her father said. "Look, I'm not saying you're wrong, but we're not in a position to say what those risks are. And what are the options?" She knew the rhythm of her parents, how they talked when they knew she and Zan were listening, and how it changed when they thought they were alone. This was alone grown-up talk. "I'm not arguing for that," her mother said, and Kara wondered what that was. "But look at Illis." "Illis was uncontrolled, though. Admiral Duarte seems pretty certain they can at least influence how it behaves here." "How did they even get a live sample?" Her mother's voice had gone peevish and frustrated. Why would you want that? You know this better than I do, honey. The proto-molecule was a bridge builder, but it also has an interface aspect. And being able to talk to other artifacts is... His words faded as somewhere inside he walked back to her mother. Kara looked at the shed. She was pretty sure there was a tree core sampler in there she could use to scrape the roots, but it was heavy. It probably made more sense to just roll her sleeves up and use her fingers, plus which, she didn't want to tear the roots. She walked out toward the pond, thinking about her schoolwork, the phonetics lesson. Part of the background had been about how babies learn the phonemes by listening to their parents even before there were any words involved. The way different places use sound, the difference between a particular diphthong on Ceres and the same one in the North American Shared Interest Zone, or Korea, or on Titan, or Medina Station, was something babies mastered even before they knew that they knew it. She'd read something once about a man back on Earth who'd tried to figure out how to speak with octopi by raising his baby children with octopi, hoping that the human children would grow up bilingual in octopus and English. It had sounded crazy at the time, but who knew? The way the phoneme thing worked, maybe it made sense after all. Only... she was pretty sure no one spoke octopus, so it probably hadn't ended well. She walked down the path, her steps following the little scrapes that the cart's wheels had made. The pond water was going to be cold. She could already imagine how it was going to feel pushing her arm down into it. She wondered if the babies would still be in the nest. They might be old enough to get themselves down and into the water, and she couldn't decide if that would be a good thing or a bad one. The smell of coming weather was getting thicker, but the only clouds were light, scudding veils over the sun, not much more than a lighter shade of blue. The breeze was hardly enough to stir the fronds of the trees. They made light, tapping sounds when they touched, like dry raindrops. She wondered if anyone had ever studied the little gray things on the water roots to see what they were. Probably they hadn't. Laconia had too many things on it. And there were only so many people there. It would be lifetimes before everything on the planet got discovered and understood, if that ever even happened. She'd had a history of science lesson the year before that traced how long it had taken people back on Earth to understand the ecosphere there, and there had been billions of people on Earth for thousands of years. Laconia had a few thousand people for less than a decade. At the pond, the babies were on the water, splashing pale, leathery wings and piping to each other. That was good. They were independent enough to look after themselves that much, anyway. With the drone broken, she'd still have to carry them up to the nest. She didn't like thinking about the drone, though. "Okay, little ones," she said. "Let's see if I can get you some food, okay?" She knelt at the water's edge, the wet of the mud seeping through the knees of her pants. Deep in the water, she could just make out the pale roots. They looked deeper in than she'd remembered. She was going to wind up soaking her shirt, but she started rolling up her sleeves anyway. "Mama bird," hissed. Kara fell back, scrambling on feet and elbows as Mama bird swam out of the scrub at the pond's edge. The bird bared her greenish teeth, the tiny wrinkled face deformed in rage as she rushed forward, wings spread. The babies on the pond's surface gathered behind her, clicking in distress. Kara stared, and Mama Bird coughed, spat, and turned away. For a moment, Kara tried to make this into some other bird that had happened upon the orphans and taken over the care of them. But things were wrong. The bird's skin had the same waxy, dead look it had gotten on her counter. The black eyes didn't quite focus the way a normal bird would. There were sunbirds all across the town. Kara had seen dozens, and none of them had the awkward movements this one did. None of them had the weird stillness between its movements, or the hesitation like every muscle had to be reminded how to work. Kara pulled herself up the bank, dragging her heels across the blue clover. Mama Bird ignored her, paddled to the center of the pond, paused, still as a statue, and dove down. The babies circled, excited, until she bobbed back up. All their little mouths struck at the water, spat out whatever they didn't filter out as food, and then struck again. Kara's throat felt thick. Her breath came in snatches and gasps, like someone had turned off the planet's air supply, and her heart felt like something that had blundered into a ribcage by accident and was frantic for a way back out. "Really?" she asked. Nothing answered. She pulled her legs up under her, not realizing until she'd done it that she was taking what her teacher called prayer position. She tried to be still, as if moving might pop the moment like a soap bubble. Mama Bird dove again, reemerged. The babies fed, as calm and pleased as if nothing had ever gone wrong. Mama Bird went motionless, then moved again. Kara's shock began to fade, her heart to resume its usual beat, and a slow, wide grin pulled at her lips. She wrapped her arms around herself in a hug and watched silently as the mother, who had been dead, now protected and fed and stayed with her children again. Some deep animal relief turned her bones to water and left her empty of everything but gratitude and wonder. Something shifted in the darkness under the trees. The dogs stepped into the light, walking toward her with slow, careful steps, the bulbous eyes apologetic. "Was this you?" Kara breathed. "Did you do this?" The dogs didn't answer. They only folded their complex legs and rested for a moment, looking toward Kara. She leaned over, stretched out a hand, and petted the closest one on the top of its head, where the ears would have been if it had been the kind of dog they had on Earth. Its skin was hot to the touch, soft with hard underneath, like velvet laid over steel. It made a gentle humming sound, and then all of them rose up together and turned back toward the trees. Kara stood up and walked after them, not sure what she wanted, except that there was a sudden urgency in her heart. They couldn't leave. Not yet. "Wait," she said, and the dog stopped. They waited. Can you help me?" They turned toward her again, their movements eerily synchronized. In the distance, something trilled and buzzed and trilled again. "You fixed Mama Bird," she said, nodding toward the pond. "Can you fix other things, too?" The dogs didn't move, but they didn't turn away, either. Kara held up a finger in a don't-go-away gesture and moved off to the bushes. The sampling drone was just where she'd left it. Something small had scattered the shattered bits a little, but they were all still there, as far as she could tell. She lifted up the broken machine, its limp, deactivated limbs clacking against each other. The shards she plucked up into her palm. The dogs watched, motionless. Their constant embarrassed expression now seemed to offer some sympathy, as if feeling her shame at having broken the drone. One of the dogs came forward, and she thought it was the lead from before, though she couldn't be sure. She knelt and held out the drone. She expected the eerie kikako noise again, but the dog only opened its mouth a little. What she'd taken for teeth, she saw, were really just little nubs, like the gripping surface on a wheel made for off-road travel. It had no tongue. There was no throat at the back of its mouth. It made her think of the dinosaur puppet Zan used to love. It leaned forward, taking the drone in its jaws. The little machine hung limp. A second dog stepped forward, tapping Kara's hand with one wide paw. Kara opened her shard-filled hand. The dog leaned forward, wrapping its mouth around her palm. Something in the touch tingled like a mild electrical shock or the first contact of a caustic chemical. The dog's mouth rippled against her skin, sweeping the shards away. She kept her hand flat until all the bits and pieces were gone, and the dog leaned back. Her hand was clean, apart from a brief scent of disinfectant, gone almost before she noticed it. "Thank you," she said, as the dog stepped carefully into the darkness under the trees. The one with the drone in its grip turned back to look at her, as if it was embarrassed by her gratitude, but felt obligated to acknowledge it. Then they were gone. She listened to the receding footsteps. They went silent more quickly than she'd expected. She sat quietly, arms wrapped around her legs, and watched the weird miracle of the dead but not dead sunbird until she felt like she'd given the moment all of the honor and respect it deserved. Like someone rising from a pew, she stood, peace in her heart, and headed back home. As she walked, she imagined telling her parents about the dogs, about Mama Bird. But that would mean telling them about the drone, too. After it was fixed, she'd tell them. And anyway, it was still too sweet, having it just for herself.